This is Doc Kirby for County Road 947 on The Morning Show. There are hundreds of World War II books that talk about bloody battles in which our soldiers fought, but very little has been written on the critical chapter in the history of medicine and its relationship to the Second World War. Our special guest today is Jeanette Conant, author of The Great Secret, the classified World War II disaster that launched the war on cancer, from Norton Book. I enjoyed your book very much and found it amazing. Where did you find out about the second Pearl Harbor, as they came to call it?
Well, I was researching really poison gas. I was curious why it was never used in World War II when it was the leading weapon of World War I. And then I discovered that there was this group of American poison gas victims that was completely covered up. My grandfather, who was head of all chemical weapons during World War II for the Manhattan Project, had some news about it in his papers, and I realized that the event was classified, that nobody knew about it, and that it was this incredible story.
What a great personal connection to this incredible story. So let's go back to the time. This is December the 2nd, 1943.
Yes, the Germans had caught wind of the fact that we were bringing huge amounts of tanks and bombs and guns and jeeps and everything for D-Day. We were preparing for a big push, and that the harbor was filled with cargo boats loaded with ammo. So they bombed the harbor that night, and they sunk 17 ships, and they killed over 1,000 American and British sailors and wounded at least 1,000 more. It was such a devastating airstrike that it was dubbed the Little Pearl Harbor, and it was really the worst naval disaster of the war, because Pearl Harbor happened obviously right before the war started.
Right.
But this tragedy was made all the worse by the fact that one of the American Liberty ships, the John Harvey, was carrying a secret cargo of 2,000 mustard gas bombs.
And it was the combination of the mustard gas in the water and the fuel oil and the other things that got spilled from the explosions and the spilling out of all these other ships full of weapons and war material that caused dramatic and horrible results for the people that were immersed in it and not washed off, right?
Yes, because what happened is, you know, hundreds of the sailors jumped ship from the burning ships, and they swam to safety or were rescued in lifeboats, and they were taken to the hospitals. But, you know, just like we know today from the news, the hospitals were overwhelmed with the seriously wounded and the dying, and they had to attend to those first. So these young boys just sat in their drenched uniforms for 24, sometimes up to 48 hours, waiting to be seen by the medical staff. And what we didn't know at the time was that mustard gas that had leaked from the burst mustard gas shells as the ship sank, it mixed with the fuel oil and made a super toxic solution. And basically, these guys were stewing in poison gas for one or two days, and it would kill them all in the end.
Dr. Alexander is really the hero of this story, and I would imagine that very few people have ever heard of Dr. Stuart Alexander, maybe in the oncology field, maybe. But according to your research, plenty of people that deal with chemotherapy every day never heard of him.
No, the whole incident was so completely covered up at the time because of the risk that Hitler might, you know, find out we had poison gas and retaliate and turn the whole of World War II into another chemical weapons war. So they hushed the whole thing up, and Dr. Alexander was called in to try and figure out what was wrong with these boys, because nobody would admit that it was mustard gas. And he discovered their weird blisters and their strange symptoms were mustard gas, and insisted on treating them for that, despite the fact that the British officials, including Churchill, threatened him with court-martial if he didn't remain silent.
Right.
And not only did he treat the boys, but in looking at what was happening to them, he saw these bizarre effects of mustard gas on the body. And one of them was that mustard gas appeared to attack white blood cells and just depleted the white blood cell count and destroyed the lymph nodes. And he made an incredible connection there, which would change the course of medical history.
Well, it took him a lot of arguing with a lot of people up the food chain, so to speak, to finally get the answer that mustard gas was definitely in there. But he'd already done some investigating and found evidence of it. All these samples that he took from the people who died from this whatever weird thing that was going on, he used those and shared them with cancer researchers that he knew were working on some sort of alternative to radiation and surgery, correct?
Yes, what happened was he carried out this incredibly thorough investigation. He mapped the harbor, he sent divers down to collect fragments of the shells, determined that it was definitely mustard gas. And then even though Churchill and everybody was denying that it was mustard gas, he then carried out a meticulous medical examination of all the patients. He took tissue samples. He saved their medical charts. And what he wrote was that mustard gas, if it attacked white blood cells in this way, if it suppressed white blood cells in these sailors, then probably in very small doses, it could be used to slow or stop cell division in cancer patients, where malignant cells rapidly divide and destroy healthy tissue. And that breakthrough observation was in his report. And his boss, who had the great name of Lieutenant Colonel Dusty Rhodes, he was head of Memorial Hospital, the biggest cancer hospital in the world at the time, and he was serving his wartime duty as head of the Chemical Warfare Service. He realized immediately what this young Army doctor had discovered, and he ordered secret military research into turning nitrous mustard gas, into the first medicine for cancer, which is known today as chemotherapy.
Wow, what a crazy idea that the first working chemotherapy came from, first of all, a terrible military disaster, but also a horrific biological and environmental disaster all in one. And one person that was perceptive enough to realize what it was and then see the potential for good that could come out of it and redeem, in a sense, the suffering of the people that died from the terrible event, give their death some meaning.
Yes, and that's what he really, really wanted to do. He wanted to salvage some good from this terrible tragedy. And you know, we sort of see it today in the news. You know, when you have a huge war tragedy or a pandemic, you basically have a morgue full of case studies for medical science so that doctors can suddenly see huge numbers of victims and they can begin to see a pattern and how the disease ravages the body, and then they can find a cure. So out of these tragedies, whether it's wartime or pandemics, doctors often make huge strides towards treatments and cures.
Technology advances and medical things advance as a direct result of catastrophic events that occur in combat. I know that plastic surgery basically was birthed as a science, as a legitimate arm of medicine, as a result of facial wounds that were suffered by people who didn't die of them in World War I. This kind of reminded me of that.
Yes, and anesthesia and surgery, all those advances really came out of, you know, catastrophic numbers of bodies that doctors had to work on, and they innovated in combat situations, and then those innovations benefited medical science.
Now, obviously, we would be remiss if we did not say we can learn something about how Dr. Alexander did in his follow-up trying to handle this influx of dramatic injuries that these sailors and soldiers suffered. And we can draw some inferences from that and learn some lessons from it as far as dealing with not only this pandemic, but the ones that are going to be coming, because all that know such things say this will not be the last one we ever have to deal with.
Yes, and one of the primary lessons that he wrote about in his report was the first thing you have to do is let everybody know right away that the secrecy and the cover-up had catastrophic consequences because people did not do the right thing. Had there been a poison gas warning, an alarm sounded, which was actually what military protocol calls for, these young sailors could immediately have been hosed down when they got to shore, and they all would have lived. So the lack of proper procedure turned out to be fatal. That was the main thing that he called for, and for better training so that everybody would know how to react. Treatment has to be immediate. So it sort of has many fascinating parallels for what we're going through now.
Jeanette Conant, best-selling author, New York Times best-selling author of lots of books, and her newest one is The Great Secret, the classified World War II disaster that launched the war on cancer, and it's from Norton Books. Jeanette, any other place they can find out more information about the book?
You can go to my website, JeanetteConant.com, for much more about this book, as well as the other books about World War II that I've written.
And I love it when I can find out something absolutely new, and this is certainly one of those books. So thanks for making time to talk to us today.
Thank you.
Once again, our thanks to Jeanette Conant, the author of The Great Secret, the classified World War II disaster that launched the war on cancer, from W.W. Norton and Company. This is Doc Kirby for County Road 947 on The Morning Show on FM 94.7.